I'm Shanae Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Mother, don't you recognize your son?
Oh!
Oh!
Oh! Oh! Oh! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Oh, a Sopranos podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is
Jonathan Till Thomas.
Oh, fuck. Yo, we got JTT.
And this is
Tim the Tool Zachary? Man Taylor.
Okay, all right. All right. And I'm Zachary Ty Bryant. Or whatever, I think that's his name.
Zachary Tyler.
Yep.
Something. We've got Patricia Richardson as our guest.
SAG
Vice
legend.
President.
You guys notice I went character name. You guys went actor name. So
that's right. Because we're actors.
Right. Yeah.
You know, respect the profession.
So the pattern is character, actor, character.
Yes.
That's right.
And then actor, character, actor.
Sure.
Yep.
Actor.
Choose.
Wow.
It's been
okay.
A long couple weeks.
Hey, guys. Yeah, we didn't record last week because there was some things going on.
Yeah. Everything is right with the world. Everything is good. We don't have to do anything anymore because it's all perfect now.
That's right.
It's getting better.
And we're talking about season 3, episode 7, Second Opinion.
Yes, we are.
Oh, yeah.
So for people who haven't watched in 20 years, this is the episode where, first of all, like, this is like an oasis in the season. I feel like this is like mid-season. The past 3 episodes have been fucking really traumatic and awful to watch, and this episode is just it has its heavy moments, but it's more or less a delight to watch.
Yeah, it's a bevy of like memorable lines and and facial reactions from a lot of people. It's just like especially like the Paulie and Christopher stuff is just so fucking great.
Really good stuff.
A real good palate cleanser, I guess.
Yeah.
Is a good term.
I guess
for
you
it.
Could call that a dick.
You've got the bee on your head.
You got a bee on your head.
I mean, that's
Jews
what,
with better food.
Oh yeah. I mean there's so much like that scene with Tony and Furio at the golf course is what this episode is known for. But so like
for the
rundown, Junior is dealing with, you know, his cancer diagnosis. He's just had surgery and he's taking advice from Dr. John Kennedy, who he holds in high regard. And then Carmela is dealing with getting some second opinions about her marriage to Tony. And then Paulie and Chris button heads over some size 10 shoes, but so that's basically the rundown of the episode. The episode opens with Junior going into surgery.
Yep.
And we get his POV like on the table where he's like getting cut, like the feds duck their heads in and start offering him deals, like, we'll give you the cure for cancer if you give up Tony.
Yep.
Gets and then, weirder when we see the spinning newspaper. Yeah.
Marries Angie Dickinson.
Weds
so
Angie
silly.
Dickinson.
Sure. Yeah, that was silly. That was real silly.
Like really, it's almost as though they knew like how fucking difficult the past episodes have been, and so they started out. I mean, you know, Junior under the knife for cancer is pretty grim in and of itself, but still they started out with like these like weird kind of funny jokey moments.
I agree, yeah, they did.
And even with like there's like a little montage of him like on like the like being wheeled through the hospital, and you hear like all these past quotes from the series up until that point.
Right.
It ends with
you
like
hear
echoing
Livia,
peppers and eggs. peppers and eggs. It's like, why is that the quote you end on? Why is he remembering that in that moment? He's regretting the choice that he didn't get the peppers and eggs. That's what I should have got. But
I mean, I often have dreams of food that I regret not eating.
That's true.
If we ever are going under the knife.
Yeah, when I'm slipping into unconsciousness, I'm often thinking about food.
It'll probably be Dave's hot chicken, right?
Usually it is. Have you guys ever gone under for surgery?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that is always how it goes.
A number of times.
You never count more than a few numbers, and then you're like,
and then you're done.
Yeah.
And then you hear the echoes of all the past people in your life, just like commenting lines, like sound bites, right?
And then my fifth grade teacher is like, "You'll never have a podcast." I'm like, "How did she know what a podcast was in 1995? That's so weird."
I feel like a couple times when I've gone under, or maybe I don't know. Yeah, I want a couple times. However many times it's happened, but one time I think I remember the doctor was over me. This is what I remember. He's just like, "Wait, what? What did you say?"
But you don't remember what you said. You just remember that he reacted that way.
Assume I was like, "All the Jews. Oh, I hate Jews."
And then they did surgery bad because they were like, "Fuck this guy."
Yeah, I have a metal plate in my foot. That's why I had surgery. I have a metal plate in my foot, and then they had surgery to take it out.
Is that for real? You have a metal plate in your foot?
Yeah, I did. I have a cadaver bone in my foot. A part of my ankle is from a dead person's bone.
Oh, that's sick, dude. Cadaver. That's fucking sick. Yeah.
How the fuck have neither of us discovered this about you?
Really? I've probably said it before. One time when I was hammered and when I was 16 years old, I was hanging out on Staten Island with my cousin, and I was impressing his friends that I had just met that night, and I flipped over a one of those country fences that are just three logs, and I flipped over that, just smacked my ankle, and I was like, "Ooh, that hurt," but I was drunk and I was fine. And then I woke up that night, the morning, I couldn't walk.
You weren't fine because you have a cadaver bone in your foot now. Yeah.
And no. This is before the cadaver bone. Okay. They found basically a non-cancerous tumor inside the bone that was weakening the bone. So they had to take out this much, like an inch or two of my bone, and they replaced it with a cadaver bone, and then they put a metal plate in it, and then the metal plate started hurting my ankle, and then they took the metal plate out, and the bone is fused into my bone.
Well, the first bone was too big, right? And they're like, "I don't know why we thought he was a size 10.
Yeah, nice.
Wait, do you know that's the person crazy. Whose bone you have?
No, absolutely not.
Right. How would he know that?
I don't know. Sometimes, people get heart transplants, and they're like, they call the people up to thank them. They invite them over for Thanksgiving dinner, that kind of shit.
If you're getting a heart transplant, I'm pretty sure the person you got it from is dead.
Not that person, but their family, their kids, that kind of thing.
Sometimes people don't know. Of course, I did not care.
I guess that's because that's life saving, and Joe's was like, so his foot was
idiot saving.
Fucked up.
Yeah, he jumped the country fence and needs a bone. Okay, so we made it through the opening scene of this episode. But
when we don't have a guest, we don't, do not stay.
Exactly. So then we meet Dr. Kennedy. He's like a douche, right? I mean, straight out of the gate, he's just this hotshot doctor. Everybody stands
Freaks
for him.
Freaks and Geeks. Sam Levine's dad and Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, that's right.
And The Simpsons. Tracy Ullman show. Great, mm-hmm. great actor.
Mm-hmm. Did not know that.
Great actor.
He don't plays a great name. Douche.
One of the epic douches up there with Alan Sappensley from
you could see them being good friends.
But he gives the guys the good news that he thinks that he got all the cancer out of Junior, which we know is probably not true.
some great meatballs in the waiting room with Bobby and Tony.
Oh, these old mooks hanging out. Like I want like
casting.
After a certain amount of like rewatches, you start to just watch the extras in the background because you've seen the main actors so many times, and just watching their faces as they get the news, it's like they're really hamming it up.
You three old meatballs, you guys are really excited by the doctor's good news. You guys are going to be really, you're thrilled.
And then so the other storyline that kicks off, really started brewing a few episodes ago, but you know, notches up a few gears in this episode is the Pauly-Chris beef. Chris has been made this season, but things are not going smoothly for him, especially in regards to reporting to Pauly. And Pauly, first of all, Chris beats him in pool at the Bing. And then Pauly's just like, fuck you, I'm not paying. Like, apparently they had made a bet, and he's just like, good luck getting it. Such a shithead move. But then he makes him do a strip search or a wire, which is, like, would be incredibly traumatizing. Could you imagine? And then he gets his dick made fun of. I guess you can call that a dick.
I mean, it's hazing.
Hazing. Yeah,
you know, look at the people at hand. Of course, they're fucking hazing.
So Pauly, Silvio, and Patsy, right?
And Patsy, yeah.
And Silvio says something like, "Oh, look, we got this from New York. They laid it down. Like, yes, the books are open to make new guys, but they got to be open to like, you know, strip searches and all this other shit to make sure they're not, you know, on the feds' payroll." Do you think that's true? Like, is it? It's kind of actually, now that I think about it, it's kind of weird that New York controls opening the books for Jersey. Is that like, did that strike you guys?
Well, are they?
It's like the mothership. Well, no, I mean, like.
Well, there was that group that controlled the five families, and they controlled everything. Like that group, like, you know, the bosses of all the five. I forget what they call themselves, but.
Not the association. It was like something like that. Like the commission. Like that.
The commission. Right. So maybe there's some like, you know, tangentially like related to the commission somehow or under their thumb somehow.
Because I think they even had like some sort of jurisdiction like in regards to like the Philly like mob too. Like so I believe that like in the Northeast they kind of are like they do dictate.
Right.
To an extent. Yeah. Like who's getting
yeah,
made.
Yeah, to an extent.
And, yeah.
But also at the same time, I mean, I think
it's also
like,
probably bullshit.
Still probably also can't say
right.
No to Pauly, and he
and
has
they,
to come
all,
up with
they
something.
All wanted to see Chris's dick so bad.
Exactly. Yeah, they did exactly. Want to see his dick.
Apparently.
I guess you could call that a dick.
I mean, so I my mean, question do is,
think,
do you think Chris has a small dick?
I bet he just is I bet he's just a grower, not a shower.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That
plus, like
sense.
You could you tell know, it's so, fall. You could tell it's fall for like when they go to the golf course, so it might be a little cold.
Yeah, it might be a little cold,
a little
in
chilly
there.
In the back room of the Bing.
A little chilly.
I mean, you know, Adriana want that big dick, you know. So.
See, that's my feeling. That's why I think the motivator, and then you know, obviously we see Pauly like later. Like, there's no reason to come like to his house like later. You know, I think like it stems from them like jealous that he's with Adriana. And they're like,
you think that's what it all comes down to? That's interesting.
With Pauly, I think that is part of the motivation. Is that like I look at the three people that that make him do the strip search. It's like they're older, like they might be a little envious of like Christopher's youth, mm-hmm. and of course, like, you know, you're gonna hate somebody below you, like who's younger than you, like,
right? I mean, they all probably had to go through it.
I think that's part of it. I don't think that they're necessarily jealous of Adrian. I think it's just like hazing,
well,
and
yeah,
you know, he just got made, so like he's got to keep him on his toes, really.
True. But then he follows him like when he's like hooking up with like the hooker, like
yeah,
like
because he was upset about how he like complained to Tony.
Well, in support of Furinick's argument, Pauly does take the first chance he gets to sniff Adriana's panties. So
yes,
I mean, that's
I mean, wouldn't you?
fucking
God. I know you would, Gullius. I know that's your thing.
Dude, where's Johnny the exciting. Nutsack Pino, man? This was an ep, dude.
Fans,
if you're listening, we need some more clamoring for Johnny the Nut. You used to do it. Let's hear it again.
Yeah, fans. That's true. He really actually needs your support because he actually contracted COVID-19.
Oh,
fuck.
No. We did get a shout out this week, faithful fan of the show, Ryan Perry. Because I did a poll on the Twitter for like who was your favorite, because Spotify asked like who's your favorite podcast host, and so I made a poll of like the three of us, and then a fourth option was fuck yous, which one, of course, obviously, as it should. But Ryan Perry responded, what, no Sec Pino option? Ooh. So Sec Pino.
He's on the mend right now. You know, he got the Regeneron, he got the Remdesivir.
Got it all. He was at Walter Reed for some reason.
He was in the Army and he lives in Washington D.C. So he did go to Walter Reed.
And he had an orgy with all the doctors. Yeah. And
Him and Trump had an orgy. They both like, I guess, swapped saliva and cured themselves.
Super spreader.
So he'll be back. Soon. He's still resting though.
Good. Well, good. All the best to him.
Prayers.
Yeah. So then we get a little scene of Sunday dinner with AJ and Carmela's parents, and AJ's going to DC.
I love that. Yeah. We're going to the FBI headquarters. Yep. Tony goes, so.
Classic. But this sort of like kicks off the Carmela like B story for this episode, which is her calling into question her marriage to Tony, I guess, which, you know, is not the first time we've seen it in the series, but this sort of episode really puts it all into focus. Tony leaves mid dinner, and then Carm's mother like gets on him, like, "See, this is the example he sets, and you could have married so and so, and all this."
He has has two speeds: moping and yelling when he's here.
she's not wrong.
She's not wrong. Not wrong.
But yeah, I mean, Carm comes to Tony's defense. You know, Carm's dad didn't want to hear about like how Tony helped him with his construction bids and all this shit. So at this point she's like on Tony's side, but that sort of like plants the seed for her. And then the rest of the episode is hers more or less like feeling, getting second and sometimes third or fourth opinions from other people, like about her marriage. She goes into a therapy session with Melfi without Tony there. Why would you do that? Unless you want to get a little taste of, I don't know, some advice from a professional on this, which I always forget. I always forget that Carm has that like solo scene with Melfi in that office. And it's not because it's forgettable or bad scene, but it's just, I don't know. It's like
it's the only one.
Yeah. Certainly I think the only, scene in the series where it's just Melfi and just one other person in that office.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, wait.
Well,
what?
In the office. Well, we never see her. I was saying
it's just Melfi and Carmela.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What other character do we see in a one-on-one
Gloria
session?
We don't see Gloria. Do we see Gloria?
Okay, yeah. We do. You're right.
We see her in the waiting room. Oh, no. We do see her.
What about the guy?
Yeah, we see another.
Don't we see another like random character, like some writer too, play like a whining husband or something?
Like right before Tony walks in, like back.
I mean,
see that shit. Sure.
I mean,
but
isn't it Terrence Winter? Isn't it?
It was Terrence Winter.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But then, dude, Georgie is having a tough run the past few episodes.
The fucking eye patch on.
He's got the fucking eye patch from Ralphie hitting him with a chain in the
My father like got all caught up in the Billy Big Mouth Bass craze, and we definitely had one. We definitely had one.
Why?
Definitely thought it was so fucking funny.
I mean, they're also commenting on how like stupid they
how
are.
Stupid. Oh,
yeah. Like, yeah. Like when they're laughing like fucking retards in the car. Like, oh my God.
Just completely cutting the tension in that moment, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
I
oh,
mean, it's just like he moves, the fish head moves, and they're like, oh, uproarious. Like,
but it was,
like,
I mean, what? It was a fucking phenomenon. That fucking, like, what was wrong with us?
I don't know.
Wrong with people.
Never, I mean, never underestimate the tastes of the American public. I think Agent Harris says that in the opening of season 6. Like, we are pretty fucking easily amused. I kind of like it as a device to remind Tony of pussy in this episode.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because then we get the stuff with Ange, too. Like,
well, yeah, that's sort of like, because they want pussy to be on the minds of the viewers, but also equally Tony and Carmella. And that was kind of like a brilliant, subtle way. Like, just that's what this show did, like that no other show did. Like, they could take something in that was in like pop culture, some small fucking detail, and then make it like a character moment. And it's that speaks to the time. And I don't know. I just think, I mean, even the music, like, take me to the river, drop me in the water. Like, that's exactly what they did with Pussy's body. Like, you know, not the river, but fucking, you know. But that sort of kicks off the whole, Carm ends up meeting Angie Bumpensiero in the supermarket. And she, first of all, let me ask you guys this. Like, do you think Carmella 100% knows that Tony's responsible for Pussy's death?
She seems to, because the scene between the two of them, like when he comes home late and like he's missed dinner, she seems to not buy any of the bullshit. And the more she's just kind of silent about it and stern and like quietly, like, you know, just like pissed off at him about the situation, the more he reveals himself to be so defensive about it. That he seems so guilty, you know?
Yeah. Like, it just doesn't make, I mean, especially like Angie herself, the last time she sees Puss is Tony and the guys taking him out to the boat. Like, it doesn't, that's the last she ever hears from him. So, she knows.
I mean, Angie definitely knows. Yeah.
But does Carmella know that Angie knows? So it's like, it's so weird. They both have this unspoken, like, my husband fucking killed your husband, but you should come over for dinner sometime. Like,
well,
but also,
you know,
but
I
also
mean,
like, oh, sorry, Joe.
Do you think that Ange knew that he was working with the FBI because he did have the fucking tapes right on their like, you know, nightstand.
Sure. And his coming and going and all that shit.
Did she like know a little bit and like, you know, and everybody all knew, and it's something that everybody knows, but it's also like, and this is a lot that this episode deals with, is that Carmella is an enabler or complicit into Tony's thing, is that like, you know, do some of them, like Ange and Carmella, take the tone of then the mentality of like, well, he ratted it out. Yeah, he did rat it out. So like, I'm not going to go, you know, crazy about what happened to him because he did fuck up.
Yeah.
Do they have that mentality as well?
Yeah.
Including Ange.
Possibly. I also think Carmella's scene with the other therapist, you know, he's pointing out how much she denies in herself.
Dr. Krakauer. And this is that is like one of the
great,
most memorable
great
scenes,
scene, by the way.
In Carmella's whole arc as a character, because and the funny thing is, it's not very consequential. It doesn't like pivot her character in a new direction, but it sort of like, I don't know, for the rest of the series, there is that sort of cloud hanging over her character, because this guy says to her, one thing you can never say is that you haven't been told.
Yeah.
And his absolutism in what she should do morally is so jarring compared to Melfi that it's, you know, and she doesn't, you know, ultimately we know she does leave Tony for a time, but not for another you know, season and a half.
Well, and the episode ends with her getting the $50,000 to donate. Yeah. Right, right. And she she gets lets herself be bought by Tony.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of people, therapists actually had took issue with that scene because they were like, no therapist would ever be so judgmental in the room. But I think what they did, and I think it was smart on like the writers and the castings part, like make it this old guy on death's door who's just seen it all and had enough, and he's just telling it like it is at this point. And I buy that.
The bullshit of his clients.
Right. And he sees right through it. And also, I was reading, the guy who played him actually did pass away 2 weeks before the episode aired.
Wow.
He's great, by the way. He's so good.
He's really good.
I don't know, I guess someone wouldn't be so blunt on their first session.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very blunt. He's like, I won't take your blood money. Like,
yeah, that's kind of weird. I mean, maybe you know, they do bring in like the Jew element to it. I don't know if that like it is another factor in his motivation, but
what, like cranky Jew? Is that what you're saying?
No, or that they have like, you know,
because she brings up religion. Like I brought like a
And he's
did I just reveal my anti-Semitism?
Well,
no, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, as if there's more honor in their religion or something or their people.
Well, he can more readily dismiss Carmel. You know, she's like, I talked to my priest and she says, and he says I should stick with him. And he's like, well, how's that working out?
How's that working out? Right.
Like, not
that
good.
That I feel is real though. Like that moment is real.
For sure. For sure.
But yeah.
I mean that scene actually, Edie Falco won. I think she won an Emmy for this episode, and probably that scene clinched it for her because she was so good.
Did you also notice that she's in between the legs of the statue like Tony is?
Oh, yeah. When she's going into the session with Melfi, that's the famous opening shot of the series is Tony wedged between the legs of this statue of a naked woman. And Carmela even says, like, I don't...
She points out that she didn't like it, yeah.
She's like, I'm not a big fan of that statue. She liked the art.
Melfi gives her the look like, okay, well, fuck you, bitch. Like,
yeah, well, you have no taste or whatever.
Okay, well...
Chris comes home with those shoes.
Okay.
And Adriana's... First of all, I love that Adriana's watching Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
Deborah. It's Deborah. The other Italian-American TV family that was airing at the time. Very different. Right.
A little more wholesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Chris.
Yo, big up Hofstra, Phil Rosenthal, Hofstra, baby.
Shit. There you go. Yo, everybody feed Phil.
I never watched.
I know you're gonna keep talking about that, but go ahead, Paulie.
No, so the whole thing with Chris and Paulie, like, you know, we already touched on like maybe Paulie's infatuation with Aid. I think it's more of just like a power thing, and he's just taking such glee and shitting all over Chris. But this sort of like sets up, like, you know. Like Pine Barrens, even, you know, just this whole boil of Chris and Paulie. Like, that's probably one of my favorite feuds from the entire series. Is just whenever Chris and Paulie butt heads, like, that's the best.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is the best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
I got a couple good lines. I mean, well, he says he calls Paulie Spacone.
Spacone, yeah.
Is it Spacone or Schwacone?
I think it's Schwacone. S F
Schwacone.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Coco.
I could be wrong. Let me not go against Coco.
Oh, I kind of feel like what Chris said is
Angie's dog or our friend Coco?
He says like Spacone, but I thought it was interesting because I'd never heard Spacone before. But Chris says Schwacone, which I think is probably right. Probably just means idiot, like all those Italian, like Italian slurs, Italian things.
Stunad.
And then of course, you know, like another great line is like, or a great just scene is when she tells him that she sucked Penn Jillette's dick.
And so good.
He's like, you low life cunt whore. gets so mad.
He gets so furious.
Right before they come into his apartment.
I know that they put it in because it solely just, it probably amused the writer's room to no end to include that. But like, why Penn Jillette? Like why?
Well, I mean, it makes sense. Well, like, you know, AC. What entertainer like goes to casinos? Yeah. Like they're definitely huge in casino entertainment.
But they sort of like, because she was like, oh, he followed me in the bathroom or something like that. Or they made him be like a creep.
Yeah, be a creep.
Which I buy. But
yeah. I also love that scene when Chris first says about Paulie, fuck him in the Coupe de Ville he wrote in.
But yeah, so I mean, the whole Chris and Aid thing, like, sort of carries throughout the episode, and him sniffing the panties is just like fucking unforgivable. I love Paulie's code of like, look, the day they're married, anything that touches their pussy is off limits. Okay. Yeah. What a code of honor, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you guys think about I thought it was kind of weird. The Carmela visiting Meadow scene, they play this sort of like depressing music and she's sort of waiting in the dorm hall.
It's a Nils Lofgren song.
Yeah, I don't even know that
from
guy.
East Street Band.
Oh,
he's one of the guitarists from East Street Band.
Is that the ending song too?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess it's ultimately like because that conversation devolves into Meadow criticizing Carmela, like, I'm not going to get caught up in whatever accommodational pretense you and daddy have, you know what I mean? Like, right. Which is just reminder. Go ahead.
And still blaming Tony for the, like, Noah being a piece of shit. Like,
yeah.
Like, obviously Tony was in the wrong, but that's not why Noah dumped her. Mm-hmm. Like, Noah dumped her because he's like older and like a fucking douchebag.
Right. And it's almost like Carmela wanted to go visit her daughter just so she could hear about the breakup. So she can like feel a little better, like, oh, my marriage is secure. Like, it's all part of her. Like, she visits person to person, even like the guy from Colombia, like, and she's reassessing her marital situation through the eyes of like every character that she meets with, her parents, and then Melfi, Meadow, the dean or whoever the fuck he is from Colombia, and then ultimately Krakauer, the therapist. But yeah, what'd you guys think of that, the fucking Dean, the Dean character?
I mean, such a fuck, just another like white turd. Like,
yeah,
nah, like, dude, yeah. He's Italian, man.
Yeah, he's a paisan. He's a paisan. Yeah, in name only.
No, not even.
Yeah,
when a stroke of the pen in Ellis Island.
Yeah.
When he like speaks Italian to the fucking bartender, like, oh god, fucking kill me.
Get the fuck out of here.
dude, fuck you, dude.
Wait, what the fuck do you want?
Yeah.
You're midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, you're on the Upper West Side, you fucking douchebag. Fuck you.
And then
I've had my like issues with Jamie Lynn Sigler like as an actress like from time to time. But the character is like so well written because they really capture, especially in this time period of the show, they capture like the moodiness, I think, in a less like over the top way like they did in the beginning. Because like I think it was the episode before, she's like at like she's back home and talking about, oh, the Eloise movie is coming out. Anyway, when it comes out, we are so there. And she's like so excited. Mm. And then like, you know, in this episode, Carm comes, she brings her like dry cleaning and like homemade meal, and she just insults like Carmela's like intelligence. Right, she's such a fucking dick to her.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah, but that's, you know, that's fucking moody. That's how college student kids.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good writing. It's good writing.
Yeah, yeah. And then fucking Kennedy fucking over Junior. We got, so Junior ends up getting a second opinion before he goes back under the knife, which is reasonable. And there ends up being this like consortium of doctors, like trying to decide what the best path forward is for him. And then Kennedy decides, I don't want whatever doctor from Sloan Kettering looking over my shoulder on this surgery. So I'm just not going to fucking deal with this
guy. Best cancer hospital like in the world, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So basically he's like, I don't want any doctor noticing my faults.
But ultimately, I feel like it's not even so much that he doesn't want that like doctor leaning over his shoulder that stops him from communicating further with Junior. I think it's ultimately just that the fact that Junior went for a second opinion at all.
Didn't trust him.
Yeah, like a blow to his ego that he's just like, well, fuck this guy. Which ultimately leads to one of the most iconic like intimidation scenes on the golf course with him.
Oh, yeah.
With, dude, I got to give credit to Federico Castellucci, because he fucking rolled up on that golf cart and dude, really fucking turned the wheel like right before he struck that actor.
So,
Right
in front of the golf ball.
Oh, yeah.
Like top notch.
Yeah.
Top notch.
Great golf cart work.
And I don't think they practiced it at all. I heard that was just done in one take.
The first time he wasn't supposed to do it.
Yeah.
No,
he's like, I used to park these things when I growing up. You know, I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah. And then the famous, like, there's a bee on your head.
On your head. That whole fucking stupid a fucking game.
Mr. Williams here, he don't play. Stupid a fucking game.
Stupid a fucking game.
Yeah, that I mean, whole scene is just so quoted, because that is a scene that you really needed after the last few episodes, where you can get on Tony's side again. You'd be like, these fucking asshole doctors, they don't have a fucking receptionist answering the call, like this and that. Blah, blah. Like everybody just wishes so much that they could cut through the bullshit like Tony does and fucking get a guy to do what he wants. The right thing to do, by the way, is like fucking follow up with your patient. He's doing the right thing. And Tony, and of course, with the assistance of Furio, just fucking nails it. That's why I think that scene is so like beloved by fans.
Yeah.
It's a comment on the healthcare system in this country. You have to be up on top of your health as much as your doctor, or even more.
Yeah. Yeah, Medicare for all, dude. Oh fuck. Yeah, shouldn't have said.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah.
Junior
gets mad at Bobby too, for only asking about when he can eat regular food again.
Right. Yeah, so the other how many white castles you have? I can smell it.
I can smell it.
It looked like Junior was making like a milk and ground beef smoothie.
Oh my god,
that
was terrible.
I was like, what? What was that? What is that clump of stuff?
I was assuming it was ice cream, I guess. But
oh yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But
I thought it was like protein powder or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It's probably ice cream. I mean, you think he's getting protein powder from Costco?
Doubt it. Just eating ice cream, Herbalife. blended milkshakes for 3 weeks. That's good for your cancer, June.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yelling at Bobby for having White Castle, and he's like, yeah, making an entire blender full of ice cream. Okay.
But yeah, ultimately. Oh, by the way, little Tony Hale cameo.
Oh yeah,
Arrested Development.
Buster Bluth. Yep.
Yep.
Is that the chemo that he's like hooking up Junior to?
Yeah. And then Kennedy comes back. He's like, "Oh, you got the best guy. You got the best guy here."
It's like
Tony Hale's like, "What? Sure."
Yeah, me and Dave worked with Tony Hale.
Oh hell yeah,
we did indeed.
Wait, Paul, were you there too?
No,
you weren't.
No, Paul wasn't on that one. But
no, he was on the other one.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yep. The nicest.
We were in a bathroom with him.
Nicest fucking guy ever.
You went to the bathroom with Tony Hale? That's great.
Well, we were shooting
a thing. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I produced. I produced a short for College Humor that he was in.
That's right.
And he was the most lovely person. So
shout out. Yeah, he was really nice.
Love Tony Hale.
Oh yeah.
So this final scene when Tony comes home and Carmela's on the couch. Do you think she is as depressed as she is sort of admitting, or do you think this is an act of manipulation to get Tony to do what she wants him to do? What do you think? The final scene with her on the couch and she's like,
I think she's depressed.
You think it's genuine?
I think it's both.
Well, she's certainly manipulating Tony. But I don't think she, because some people, I was reading like comments and this and that. Some people are like, oh, she's a mastermind. She's not depressed. She's just fucking acting that way to get what she wants. I buy that she's that depressed.
I think she.
Yeah.
And I think she knows that. I think she knows. Yeah, I think she knows that she can use her authentic depression to her advantage. I think that's how her brain works.
And I think she feels like she had the leverage because of the scene in the kitchen at dinner the night before when Tony clearly revealed his cards.
Yeah.
And
right.
Basically, like, in so many words, revealed that, like, he made pussy disappear. Like,
right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. She turns the other cheek continually. Like forever. I mean, there's something like this in the next season with the money out of the bird feeder, right? She more or less is saying like, look, because after Krakauer puts it to her, like, leave him, get out, take what's left of the kids. You can't take blood money. Like, you know, all that. She obviously makes the conscious decision. Like, I can't leave Tony. I'm stuck with him. So as long as I can milk him for the things that I want, then I'm going to continue with this.
Right? Yeah. And I mean, I think it's like she's complicit and like, and maybe that's what I was trying to say is that like, he's the non-Italian who's like telling you like, no, this is wrong. But all these Italians, including her parents, Carmela's parents, and maybe even Melfi, who doesn't give her like the, you know, the cold water to the face. Like maybe it's just that all the Italians are complicit.
A little bit,
you know.
Yeah.
Like that's what I sort of think it is, and Angie too. You know. Yeah.
Oh, this is also we don't need to have a discussion about it, but iconic line. I like the juices as some pulp.
Oh yeah, of course. Classic scene.
And she's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. I mean, gotta give it to. So Lawrence Connor wrote this episode. You gotta get like, I mean, iconic, just moments, memeable.
Iconor, dude.
Iconor. Oh, he went on to do a bunch of Boardwalk Empire, also.
Yes.
Nice.
But so yeah, the final scene ultimately, Tony sort of recognizes like, hey, it must be awful to be married to me. Like, I think he sort of is cognizant of that. And that's sort of why he agrees to the 50K. And then on top of that, he's like, you look like you could use a night off from cooking. Let's go out. And that's sort of how the episode ends.
Mm-hmm. Often when I do something nice for my wife, it's so I did something bad to precede it. And, and I know I fucked up and spoke, you know, said something I regret. And I'm like, well, I need to make this up. And and that's when I usually write a $50,000 check to my wife.
So, to Columbia.
You know, I do it a lot. Yeah, I do it a lot.
Cool. And that is Second Opinion.
Yeah, it's funny. I was like, oh, it's kind of one of those transition episodes. And then, watching it, you know, there's so many great things in this episode.
You're right. Like I was surprised at how many moments within this episode that I had previously, like, in my mind, I was like, oh, this is sort of like a filler episode. But it's not.
It's one of those Seinfeld episodes. One of those Seinfeld episodes where,
like Gaber said,
so many things happen.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Anything else from this ep you want to touch on? We good?
We good.
All right.
We good.
What's
Joe, new? Second opinion?
Yeah, no, not this time.
No. Joe's just been rubbing his weird foot now for the last half hour. Just rubbing the
bone. It doesn't hurt
me
anymore.
Well, that's good. Good.
Yes. Well, sometimes. I don't know. But yeah.
Oh! The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Chasing it, baby, chasing it. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Right, okay, so we'll move into fucking internet.
Fucking
yeah, that's what I was wanting us to do.
Yeah. fucking internet. Can we get like a little theme song for this? No. All right,
absolutely not.
Yeah, get Danny.
I just did it. Yeah, get Danny. Dude,
oh yeah,
made
that's true.
Fucking
yeah,
banging. The best part of our podcast is our theme song.
Yeah,
you know
people. Yeah, so for those who don't know, my best childhood friend. Is a phenomenal musician and composer, and he edited together the theme song for the pod. So shout out to Danny.
Shout out to Danny. All right, so this is the part of the show where we respond to questions and comments, what people are generally talking about on the internet regarding Sopranos. This week, nothing from Twitter. Nothing from Twitter. Nobody's talking about this episode on Twitter. All Reddit.
Damn.
And so this one from user Sunshine Roses 247. What is the meaning behind Christopher and Polly thinking that their girlfriends wear size 10 shoes when they really don't?
That they don't know women's shoes? Shoe
it's
size?
It's a gag. It's a fucking
it's
joke.
It's a gag. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Look.
Because size 10 is a size
huge.
12 for a man. Right.
I mean, maybe because I worked in a bowling alley in high school, but I mean, I know shoe sizes and I think we had like one or two like sizes of like each size above like a 9 or 9.5 for women. Like there were not many.
Yeah, no.
Not many people coming in with that size foot.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. No. People obsess over like numbers in this series, like the whole 3 o'clock thing and this like. People are looking for meaning in things. This was a fucking
numerology.
Gag. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a gag.
I hate this shit.
Yeah.
Yo, fuck you, user Sunshine Roses 247. Dumb question. User
idiot
Davo Birmingham. Was Dean Ross actually Italian? In season 3, episode 7, one of my favorite episodes, Carmela goes out for dinner with the Dean of Columbia, who convinces her to part with 50 G's. In the process, he explains that his name is Ross. His name Ross is short for Rossetti. 1,000 years of a proud name undone with one stroke of a pen at Ellis Island. The actor, Frank Wood, does not look Italian at all. And of course, he isn't. As viewers, are we supposed to take him at his word and accept that he's Italian? Or are we supposed to be suspicious of him? Is the whole point that he is lying and taking advantage of Carmela's Italian pride and naivety? Or am I overthinking it? I've always wondered.
No. I definitely don't think you're overthinking it. I think that's a fair question, yeah.
I mean, the guy, like, seems... he's so inauthentic.
Right.
He's such a salesman. So right. I don't think it's so far-fetched. I can see it going either way. You could imagine, and Tony has the, I mean, it's anti-Semitic, but like he has the gut reaction that like, yeah, Dean Ross, he's Jewish. Could be. Ross is a Jewish name.
Yeah. I feel like that's a name like for every ethnicity.
It's pretty convenient that he could claim Rossetti from that, but he does speak Italian.
Oh yeah. But like that someone who's in academia could like also know Italian.
True.
Right. And you know, and he's done it's revealed that he's done like so much homework on her.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
I like that.
He's just a fucking snake.
I kind of want to like first time agree with one of these Reddit users that what they're thinking is correct. Okay, yeah, okay. I mean that makes it a lot more fun to think like that. To think about it like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, he's not shy about telling her like it's his job to get money out of her. So.
Yeah, and ultimately, he gets his way. So.
Yeah. Not a far leap. This one from user Wondertunge, second opinion. So after Tony takes Junior to seek out a second opinion regarding his cancer treatment, he asks his uncle about Kennedy worship and a lack of respect for Hoffa and the Teamsters, to which Junior replies, That was the brother. I've watched this show multiple times and still have no idea what he is referring to. Does anyone know
what Junior Robert is? Kennedy? What?
Yeah.
Bobby.
Hey.
My God, read a book.
Well, this guy, who knows? This person might not be American.
True. But the man is a like American icon that like almost as much as John was like was assassinated when he was running for president and most likely would have been president.
Yeah, he's got a bridge named after him in New York. I mean,
that's right.
I think that is an interesting fascination about them though, because I guess like they thought like. JFK was like the mob helped.
Yeah, he get was him mobbed elected, up.
Right. Yeah. But then his brother goes after the mob.
Yes.
Right.
That's correct. Why, you know.
Well, so this person asks on Reddit, Underwooding, why did Columbia want Tony Soprano's donation money? Was just watching Second Opinion where Meadows Dean at Columbia meets Carmela for lunch to solicit a $50,000 donation. He slaps down some sort of research dossier explicitly saying that he's looking into the Sopranos tax returns and knows how much money the family gave to Meadows High School or AJ's high school, right? It was Verbum Day. Didn't he end up?
Verbum Day. Yeah.
Is that AJ or is that Meadow?
I think that was AJ, right?
It was AJ, right?
Yeah.
Because he got expelled and then had to. Okay. Right? Or no. Yeah. Right? No, he doesn't get expelled until.
Would they have gone to the same
the
high school?
End of the season, right?
They did not go to the same high school because we never saw them like at high school like in high school together.
But naturally, like you send one kid to high school, you would send
them to private school.
I mean, I guess that's true. That's
anyway,
true.
Which begs the question: anyway. Why the fuck is Columbia asking for money from the Sopranos? They've clearly done in-depth research on the family's financial background. It seems like it would be impossible to miss the extensive news coverage of Tony's ties to the mob. These kinds of donations are public too, right? Why would Columbia want everyone to know they were taking mob money?
Motherfucker, Jared Kushner's dad gave fucking $2 million to Harvard so he would fucking get in. And Jared Kushner's dad went to fucking prison. So, yeah, they don't give a fuck who's writing the check, man.
Yeah, no.
That's true. Yeah, that's a little naive on your part. They will take whatever the fuck
they will take the money.
It
takes a lot of money to control like half of Harlem real estate and Morningside Heights in
those Morningside Heights gangsters.
Damn, is Rachel Rachel Maddow on the podcast right now or something? You really know a lot about the Kushners and all.
Paul, please keep us abreast.
This is a great one from Uncle Meat 13.
Oh hell yeah, that's finally a good handle.
Guys, this is prepare yourself for this. After Tony smashes up Angie's car, when he's talking to her, Gandolfini has some bullshit on his lip, and I can't stop fucking looking at it. It's like a piece of paper or something. Spit it out. Just had to bring that up. I want y'all to notice it on all your rewatches now. Damn. Uncle Meat didn't Uncle notice Meat, the paper or some shit.
I didn't notice it. No.
No.
But what can we say?
But thanks for you know, hopefully our audience will go back and check that out and see if you are right or not, Meat.
Yeah. Or maybe they don't need to watch it and it's something that's really irked them in the past and they remember.
I mean,
maybe there was something on your, like, you know,
TV screen.
TV that you're watching.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Meat.
Okay, moving on to some questions beyond this episode. This one from user BillyMac05. Which character deserved a beatdown but never received one? What do you guys think?
That's a good question.
Yeah. You got to think a little
bit.
Carmella.
Okay.
No.
I mean,
fuck.
A lot of people's minds probably go to Janice, but we saw her get a beatdown from the Russians.
She got a beatdown. That's why. And a beatdown from fucking Richie. It's why, yep. Like, the catalyst for killing him.
Yep. What about, I mean, Richie never really got a beat down. He got shot.
He never
got.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. We never saw Richie like get punched or hit.
I'll count
or,
that as a beat down, though.
I mean, yeah. I think death
dying.
Is.
Yeah.
It's kind of the ultimate beat down is death.
Maybe Paulie. I mean, Paulie, like, never, no one messed with him.
That's true. When we never saw Paulie really taking any hits.
When he gets kneed in the Colombian, when he makes that big fucking cash cow.
Maybe
my fucking balls.
I don't know, Johnny Sack. Do you guys think Johnny Sack deserved the beatdown? I mean,
I would think Paulie would deserve a beatdown more than Johnny. Just because, like, Paulie's like
Butchie,
you know,
maybe Butchie. Butchie was a piece of shit.
Oh yeah, Butchie.
Hmm. I'm just trying to think. I mean, fucking Noah would have loved to see.
Oh,
that guy.
Oh yeah,
fucking...
actually, yeah. You know what?
yeah. It's okay. We all agree. It's
Noah.
Yeah, okay.
It's Noah. All right. It's definitely Noah.
Would have been nice if he, like, took that newspaper when he's poking him and just shoved it through his chest cavity.
Just thinking about when he's like, just he's lucky I didn't knock his lights out.
It would have been nice to see him try.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a deleted scene we could find.
Oh, I wish. And this one from user Deadco Mule. It's an old fashioned soprano style duel. Patsy Parisi and Matt Bevilacqua stand back to back. Instead of taking 10 paces, they each sprint to opposite sides of a scuzzy New Jersey parking lot, blindly blasting pistols over their shoulder. Who wins and why?
Patsy.
Patsy.
Fucking seasoned, like, actual criminal. Like, yeah. Bevilacqua went to Pace College.
I mean, this is... Obviously, this question is posed because we see both of these characters aimlessly firing guns over their shoulders at some point in the series. Bevilacqua
right.
dies.
Patsy survives. Patsy gets away.
So yeah. I'm going
to... If Patsy were to agree to do that with him, that like if they agreed to those terms, like we're going to run yeah. and we're going to like haphazardly like shoot behind, like, you know, hold guns and shoot behind us, they would do that and Matt Bevilacqua would start and then Patsy would just turn around and shoot him.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Yeah. That's the smarter thing to do, and that's who would win in that
scenario. And then he'd pee on him.
Yeah. And that's all I got for fucking internet.
Wow.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Amazing.
Another good ep, boys. Another good ep.
Yo. Another good ep. An ep that
I think is often overlooked. I will say I think this episode has moments that are iconic to the fandom. But yes. when people are naming their favorite episodes, even from this season, second opinion is often overlooked. So
it is true.
Maybe unjustly.
It is true. We wanted to shout out, I think we were going to do it last week and then we didn't record, but, we wanted to shout out, our buddy JB, Jem Bolton, who, is, an avid listener. He pointed out that we need to stop saying like. Too many times we say like a lot, and you know what? He's absolutely right. I edit the pod when I'm listening back. I especially notice it myself. Really going to try to get these likes out, okay, folks?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I wasn't conscious of it this week, so I might have threw some likes in there, but I will try my best going forward.
I feel like we when we have a guest.
Could be.
Maybe.
Could be. I mean, look. We're working on it, John. I mean,
it was a great note. And if anybody else has anything that, you know, they want to say, we love interacting yep. with our fans and, you exactly. know, we'll shout you on the podcast or, you know, we make may make fun of you.
Yeah, it's true. You won't know
if you
way.
Want that. Yeah.
Please
yeah.
call us on.
If you want that, please.
So please. Exactly. Send us your bullshit at osopranospod@gmail.com. You can always follow us on Twitter and Instagram at osopranospod. You know, we're trying to post the memes.
We're doing the memes.
We're doing the memes. You know, we're no time immemorial. We're no Sopranos Graham, but, you know, we're trying to hold it down for y'all. Good episode, boys. Good to be back.
Good episode. And tune in next week. We have David Chase.
That's right. The man. The man, the myth,
my
the
account.
Legend.
David Chase and Mike.
That's right. Of Chase Bank. No, it's David from Chase Bank. All right, until next time.
Oh.